Chapter 42. Easing the Badger. The hubbub of the city quickly submerged Zareen's laughter, if that was what it was, beneath all the clamor that Perrin remembered from Camelin and Kyrian. The sounds were different here, slower and pitched differently, but they were the same, too. Boots and wheels and hooves on rough, uneven paving stones, cart and wagon axles squealing, music and song and laughter drifting from inns and taverns. Voices. A hum of voices like putting his head into a giant beehive. A great city living. From down a side street he heard the clang of hammer on anvil and shifted his shoulders unconsciously. He missed the hammer and tongs in his hands, the white-hot metal giving off sparks as his blows shaped it. The smithy sounds faded behind, buried under the rumble of carts and wagons and the babble of shopkeepers and people in the streets. Under all the smells of people and horses, cooking and baking, in 100 scents he had found peculiar to cities, lay the smell of marsh and salt water. He was surprised the first time they came to a bridge inside the city, a low arch of stone over a waterway no more than 30 paces across. But by the third such bridge, he realized that Ilion was crisscrossed by as many canals as streets, with men poling laden barges as often as plying whips to move heavy wagons. Sedan chairs wove through the crowds in the streets, and occasionally the lacquered coach of some wealthy merchant or a noble, with crest or house sign painted large on the doors. Many of the men wore peculiar beards that left their upper lip bare, while the women seemed to favor hats with wide brims and attached scarves that they wound around their necks. Once they crossed a great square, many hides in extant, surrounded by huge columns of white marble, at least 15 spans tall and 2 spans thick, supporting nothing but a wreath of carved olive branches at the top of each. A huge white palace stood at either end of the square, each all columned walks and airy balconies, slender towers and purple roofs. Each reflected the other exactly, at first glance, but then Perrin realized that one was just a fraction smaller in each dimension, its towers perhaps less than a pace shorter. "The King's Palace," Zareen said against his back, "and the Great Hall of the Council. It is said the first King of Ilion said the Council of Nine could have any palace they wished, just as long as they did not try to build one larger than his. So the council copied the king's palace exactly, but 2 feet smaller in every measurement. That has been the way of Ilion ever since. The king and the council of nine duel with each other, and the assemblage struggles with both. And so while they carry on their battles, the people live much as they wish, with none to look over their shoulders too much. It is not a bad way to live, if you must be tied to one city. You would also like to know, I think, Blacksmith, that this is the square of Tammuz, where I took the hunter's oath. I think I will end up teaching you so much no one will notice the hay in your hair." Perrin held his tongue with an effort, resolving not to stare so openly again. No one seemed to take Loyal as anything much out of the ordinary. A few people looked at him twice, and some small children scampered along in their wake for a time, but it appeared that Ogier were not uncommon in Ilion. None of the folk seemed to notice the heat or the damp, either. For once, Loyal did not appear pleased with the people's acceptance. His long eyebrows drooped down on his cheeks, and his ears had wilted, though Perrin was not sure that was not just the air. His own shirt clung to him with a mixture of sweat and the damp air. "Are you afraid you'll find other Ogier here, Loyal?" he asked. He felt Zareen stir against his back and cursed his tongue. He meant to let the woman know even less than Moraine apparently meant to tell her. That way, perhaps, she would grow bored enough to leave. If Moraine will let her go now. Burn me, I don't want any bloody falcon perched on my shoulder, even if she is pretty. Loyal nodded.
"Our stonemasons sometimes come here."
He spoke in a whisper, not only for an Ogier, but for anyone. Even Perrin could barely hear.
"From Steading Shangtai, I mean. It was masons from our steading who built part of Ilion, the Palace of the Assemblage, the Great Hall of the Council, some of the others. And they always send to us when repairs need to be done. Perrin, if there are Ogier here, they will make me go back to the steading. I should have thought of it before now, This place makes me uneasy, Perrin.
His ears shifted nervously. Perrin moved a step closer and reached up to pat Loyal's shoulder. It was a long reach, above his head. Conscious of Zareen at his back, he chose his words carefully. Loyal, I do not believe Moraine would let them take you. You have been with us a long time, and she seems to want you with us. She will not let them take you, Loyal. Why not? He wondered suddenly. She keeps me because she thinks I may be important to Rand, and maybe because she doesn't want me telling what I know to anyone. Maybe that's why she wants him to stay.
Of course she would not,
Loyal said in a slightly stronger voice, and his ears perked up.
I am very useful, after all. She may need to travel the ways again, and she could not without me.
Zareen shifted against Perrin's back, and he shook his head, trying to catch Loyal's eye. But Loyal was not looking. He seemed to have just heard what he had said, and the tufts on his ears had fallen a little.
I do hope it's not that, Perrin.
The Ogier looked at the city around them, and his ears went all the way back down.
I do not like this place, Perrin.
Moraine rode closer to Lan and spoke softly, but Perrin managed to catch her words. Something is wrong in this city. The warder nodded. Perrin felt an itch between his shoulders. The Aes Sedai had sounded grim. First Loyal and now her? What don't I see? The sun shone down on the sparkling roof tiles, made reflections from pale stone walls. Those buildings looked as if they might be cool inside. The buildings were clean and bright, and so were the people. The people. At first he saw nothing out of the ordinary. Men and women moving about their business, purposeful, but slower than he was used to further north. He thought it might be the heat and the bright sun. Then he spotted a baker's lad trotting down the street with a big tray of fresh loaves balanced on his head. The young fellow wore a grimace on his face that was nearly a snarl. A woman in front of a weaver's shop looked as if she might bite the man holding up the bright-colored bolts for her inspection. A juggler on a corner ground his teeth and stared at the folk who tossed coins into the cap lying in front of him as if he hated them. Not everyone looked so, but it seemed to him that at least one face in five wore anger and hatred. And he did not think they were even aware of it. What is the matter? Zareen asked. You are tensing. It is like holding onto a rock. Something is wrong, he told her. I do not know what, but something is wrong. Loyal nodded sadly and murmured about how they would make him go back. The buildings around them began to change as they rode, crossing more bridges as they crossed Ilion to its other side. The pale stone was as often undressed as polished now. The towers and palaces vanished to be replaced by inns and warehouses. Many of the men in the streets, and some of the women, had an oddly rolling gait. They all had the bare feet he associated with sailors. The smells of pitch and hemp were strong in the air, and the scent of wood, both freshly cut and cured, with sour mud overlying both. The canal's odors changed, too, making his nose wrinkle. Chamber pots, he thought. Chamber pots and old privies. It made him feel queasy. The Bridge of Flowers, Lan announced as they crossed yet another low bridge. He inhaled deeply. And now we are in the perfumed quarter. The Ilioners are a poetic people. Zareen stifled a laugh against Perrin's back. As if he were suddenly impatient with the slow pace of Ilion, the warder led them quickly through the streets to an inn, two stories of rough green-veined stone topped with pale green tiles. Evening was coming on, the light growing softer as the sun settled. It gave a little relief from the heat, but not much. Boys seated on mounting blocks in front of the inn hopped up to take their horses. One black-haired lad, about 10, asked Loyal if he were an Ogier, and when Loyal said he was, the boy said, I did think it did be, with a self-satisfied nod. He led Loyal's big horse away, tossing the copper Loyal had given him into the air and catching it. Perrin frowned up at the inn sign for a moment before following the others in. A white-striped badger danced on its hind legs, with a man carrying what seemed to be a silver shovel. Easing the badger, it read. It must be some story I never heard. The common room had sawdust on the floor and tobacco smoke filled the air. It also smelled of wine and fish cooking in the kitchen, and a heavy, flowered perfume. The exposed beams of the high ceiling were rough-hewn and age-dark. This early in the evening, no more than a quarter of the stools and benches were filled by men in workmen's plain coats and vests, some with the bare feet of sailors. All of them sat clustered as close as they could manage around one table, where a pretty, dark-eyed girl, the wearer of the perfume, sang to the strumming of a 12-string bittern and danced on the tabletop with swirls of her skirt. Her loose white blouse had an extremely low neck. Perrin recognized the tune, The Dancing Lass, but the words the girl sang were different from what he knew. A Lugard girl, she came to town to see what she could see. With a wink of her eye and a smile on her lip, she snagged a boy or three. With an ankle slim and skin so pale, she caught the owner of a ship. With a soft little sigh and a gay little laugh, she made her way so free, so free. She launched into another verse, and when Perrin realized what she was singing, his face grew hot. He had thought nothing could shock him after seeing Tinker Girls dance, but that had only hinted at things. This girl was singing them right out. Zareen was nodding in time to the music and grinning. Her grin widened when she looked at him. "Why, farm boy, I do not think I ever knew a man your age who could still blush." He glared at her and barely stopped himself from saying something he knew would be stupid. "This bloody woman has me jumping before I can think. Light, I'll wager she thinks I never even kissed a girl." He tried not to listen to any more of what the girl was singing. If he could not get the red out of his face, Zareen was sure to make more of it. A flash of startlement had passed across the face of the proprietress when they entered. A large, round woman with her hair in a thick roll at the back of her neck and a smell of strong soap about her. She suppressed her surprise quickly, though, and hurried to Moraine.
"Mistress Mari," she said, "I did never think to see you here today."
She hesitated, eyeing Perrin and Zareen, glanced once at Loyal, but not in the searching way she looked at them. Her eyes actually brightened at the sight of the Ogier, but her real attention was all on Mistress Mari. She lowered her voice.
"Have my pigeons not arrived safely?"
Lan, she seemed to accept as a part of Moraine.
"I am sure they have, Nida," Moraine said. "I have been away, but I am sure Adina has noted down everything you reported."
She eyed the girl singing on the table with no outward disapproval, nor any other expression.
"The badger was considerably quieter when last I was here." "Aye, Mistress Mari, it did be that. But the louts have no gotten over the winter yet, it does seem. I have no had a fight in the badger in 10 years, till the tale of this winter gone."
She nodded toward the one man not sitting near the singer, a fellow even bigger than Perrin, standing against the wall with his thick arms folded, tapping his foot to the music.
"Even Billy did have a hard time keeping them down. So I did hire the girl to take their minds from anger. From some place in Altara she does come."
She tilted her head, listening for a moment.
"A fair voice. But I did sing it better, aye, and dance better, too, when I did be her age."
Perrin gaped at the thought of this huge woman capering on a table, singing that song. A bit of it came through, "I'll wear no shift at all," until Zareen fisted him hard in the short ribs. He grunted. Nida looked his way.
"I'll mix you some honey and sulfur, lad, for that throat. You'll no want to take a chill before the winter warms, no with a pretty girl like that one on your arm."
Moraine gave him a look that said he was interfering with her.
"Strange that you should suffer fights," she said. "I well remember how your nephew stops such, as something occurred to make people more irritable."
Nida mused for a moment.
"Perhaps. It do be hard to say. The young lordlings do always come down to the docks for the wenching and carousing they can no get away with where the air does smell fresher. Perhaps they do come here more often now, since the hard of the winter. Perhaps. And others do snap at each other more, too. It did be a hard winter. That does make men angrier, and women as well. All that rain and cold. Why, I did wake 2 mornings to find ice in my washbasin. Not so hard as the last winter, of course, but that did be a winter for 1,000 years. Almost enough to make me believe those travelers' tales of frozen water fallen from the sky. She giggled to show how little she believed that. It was an odd sound from such a large woman. Perrin shook his head. She doesn't believe in snow? But if she thought this weather was cool, he could believe it of her. Moraine bent her head in thought, her hood shadowing her face. The girl on the table was beginning a new verse, and Perrin found himself listening in spite of himself. He had never heard of any woman doing anything remotely like what the girl was singing about, but it did sound interesting. He noticed Zareen watching him listen and tried to pretend he had not been. "What has occurred out of the ordinary in Ilion of late?" Moraine said finally. "I do suppose you could call Lord Bren's ascension to the Council of Nine unusual," Nita said. "Fortune prick me. I can no remember ever hearing his name before the winter. But he did come to the city, from somewhere near the Mirandian border, it be rumored, and did be raised inside a week. It do be said he be a good man, and strongest of the Nine. They all do follow his lead, it be said, though he be newest and unknown. But sometimes I do have strange dreams of him." Moraine had opened her mouth to tell Nita she had meant in the last few nights, Perrin was sure, but she hesitated and instead said, "What sort of strange dreams, Nita?" "Oh, foolishness, Mistress Mari, just foolishness. You do truly wish to hear it? Dreams of Lord Bren in strange places and walking bridges hanging in air. All fogged these dreams do be, but near every night they do come. Did you ever hear of such? Foolishness, fortune prick me. Yet it do be odd. Billy does say he does dream the same dreams. I do think he does hear my dreams and copy them. Billy do be none too bright sometimes, I do think."
"You may do him an injustice," Moraine breathed.
Perrin stared at her dark hood. She had sounded shaken, even more shaken than when she thought a new false dragon had risen in Giladon. He could not smell fear, but Moraine was frightened. It was a far more terrifying thought than Moraine angry. He could imagine her angry. He could not begin to conceive of her afraid.
"How I do maunder on," Nita said, patting the rolled hair at the back of her neck. "As if my foolish dreams do be important."
She giggled again, a quick giggle. This was not as foolish as believing in snow.
"You do sound tired, Mistress Mari. I will show you to your rooms, and then a good meal of fresh-caught red stripe."
Red stripe? A fish, he thought it must be. He could smell fish cooking.
"Rooms," Moraine said. "Yes, we will take rooms. The meal can wait."
"Ships.
Nita, what ships sail for Tyr? Early on the morrow.
I have that which I must do tonight."
Lan glanced at her, frowning.
"For Tyr, Mistress Mari," Nita laughed. "Why, none for Tyr. The Nine did forbid any ship to sail for Tyr a month gone now, nor any from Tyr to call here, though I do think the sea folk pay it no mind. But there do be no sea folk ship in the harbor. It do be odd that. The order of the Nine, I do mean, and the king silent on it, when he does always raise his voice if they but take a step without his lead. Or perhaps it be no that, exactly. All talk do be of war with Tyr, but the boatmen and wagoneers who do carry supplies to the army do say the soldiers do all look north, to Murundi."
"The paths of the shadow are tangled," Moraine said in a tight voice. "We will do what we must. The rooms, Nita, and then we will eat that meal." Perrin's room was more comfortable than he expected, given the look of the rest of the badger. The bed was wide, the mattress soft. The door was made of tilted slats, and when he opened the windows, a breeze crossed the room, carrying the smells of the harbor. And something of the canals, too, but at least it was cooling. He hung his cloak on a peg along with his quiver and axe, and propped his bow in the corner. Everything else he left in the saddlebags and blanket roll. The night might not be restful. If Moraine had sounded afraid before, it had been nothing to when she said that something must be done tonight. For an instant, then, fear scent had steamed from her, as from a woman announcing that she was going to stick her hand in a hornet's nest and crush them with her bare fingers.
What in the light is she up to? If Moraine is frightened, I should be terrified.
He was not, he realized. Not terrified or even frightened. He felt excited. Ready for something to happen. Almost eager. Determined. He recognized the feelings. They were what wolves felt just before they fought.
Burn me, I'd rather be afraid.
He was first back down to the common room except for Loyal. Nita had arranged a large table for them, with ladder-backed chairs instead of benches. She had even found a chair big enough for Loyal. The girl across the room was singing a song about a rich merchant who, having just lost his team of horses in an improbable way, had for some reason decided to pull his carriage himself. The men listening around her roared with laughter. The windows showed darkness coming on more quickly than he had expected. The air smelled as if it might be making up to rain.
"This inn has an ogier room," Loyal said as Perrin sat down. "Apparently, every inn in Ilion has one in hopes of gaining ogier custom when the stonemasons come. Nita claims it is lucky having an ogier under the roof. I cannot think they get many. The masons always stay together when they go outside to work. Humans are so hasty, and the elders are always afraid tempers will flare and someone will put a long handle on his axe."
He eyed the men around the singer as if he suspected them of it. His ears were drooping again. The rich merchant was in the process of losing his carriage to more laughter. "Did you find out whether any ogier from Steading Shangtai are in Ilion?"
"There were, but Nita said they left during the winter. She said they had not finished their work. I do not understand it. The masons would not have left work undone unless they were not paid, and Nita said it was not that. One morning, they were just gone, though someone saw them walking down the Moreto Causeway in the night. Perrin, I do not like this city. I do not know why, but it makes me uneasy."
"Ogier," Moraine said, "are sensitive to some things."
She still had her face hidden, but Nita had apparently sent someone to buy her a light cloak of dark blue linen. The fear smell was gone from her, but her voice sounded under tight control. Lan held her chair for her. His eyes looked worried. Zareen was the last down, running her fingers through just washed hair. The herbal scent was stronger around her than before. She stared at the platter Nita placed on the table and muttered under her breath,
"I hate fish."
The stout woman had brought all the food on a small cart with shelves. It was dusty in places, as if it had been hastily brought out from the storeroom in Moraine's honor. The dishes were seafolk porcelain, too, if chipped.
"Eat," Moraine said, looking straight at Zareen. "Remember that any meal can be your last. You chose to travel with us, so tonight you will eat fish. Tomorrow you may die."
Perrin did not recognize the nearly round white fish with red stripes, but they smelled good. He lifted two onto his plate with the serving fork and grinned at Zareen around a mouthful. They tasted good, too, lightly spiced.
"Eat your nasty fish, Falcon," he thought.
He also thought that Zareen looked as if she might bite him.
"Do you wish me to stop the girl singing, Mistress Mari?"
Nita asked. She was setting bowls of peas and some sort of stiff yellow mush on the table.
"So you can eat in quiet."
Staring at her plate, Moraine did not seem to hear. Lan listened a moment. The merchant had already lost, in succession, his carriage, his cloak, his boots, his gold, and the rest of his clothes, and was now reduced to wrestling a pig for its dinner, and shook his head. "She will not bother us." He looked close to smiling for a moment before he glanced at Moraine. Then the worry returned to his eyes.
"What is wrong?" Zareen said.
She was ignoring the fish.
"I know something is.
I have not seen that much expression on you, Stoneface, since I met you."
"No questions," Moraine said sharply. "You will know what I tell you and no more." "What will you tell me?"
Zareen demanded. The Aes Sedai smiled.
Eat your fish.
The meal went on in near silence after that, except for the songs drifting across the room. There was one about a rich man whose wife and daughters made a fool of him, time and again, without ever deflating his self-importance. Another that concerned a young woman who decided to take a walk without any clothes, and one that told of a blacksmith who managed to shoe himself instead of the horse. Zareen nearly choked, laughing at that one. Forgot herself enough to take a bite of fish, and suddenly grimaced as if she had put mud in her mouth.
I won't laugh at her, Perrin told himself. However foolish she looks, I'll show her what manners are.
They taste good, don't they? He said. Zareen gave him a bitter look, and Moraine a frown for interrupting her thoughts. And that was all the talk there was. Nita was clearing away the dishes and setting an array of cheeses on the table, when a stink of something vile lifted the hackles in the back of Perrin's neck. It was a smell of something that should not be, and he had smelled it twice before. He peered about the common room uneasily. The girl still sang to the knot of listeners, some men were strolling across the floor from the door, and Billy still leaned on the wall, tapping his foot to the sounds of the bittern. Nita patted her rolled hair, gave the room a quick glance, and turned to push the cart away. He looked at his companions. Loyal, unsurprisingly, had pulled a book from his coat pocket and seemed to have forgotten where he was. Zareen, absently rolling a piece of white cheese into a ball, was eyeing first Perrin, then Moraine, then him again, while trying to pretend she was not. It was Lana Moraine he was really interested in, though. They could sense a Murdrol or a Trolloc or any shadow spawn before it came closer than a few hundred paces, but the Aes Sedai was staring distantly at the table in front of her, and the warder was cutting a chunk of yellow cheese and watching her. Yet the smell of wrongness was there, as at Jara and the edge of Remen. And this time it was not going away. It seemed to be coming from something within the common room. He studied the room again. Billy leaned against the wall, some men crossing the floor, the girl singing on the table, all the laughing men sitting around her. Men crossing the floor? He frowned at them. Six men with ordinary faces walking toward where he was sitting. Very ordinary faces. He was just starting to reinspect the men, listening to the girl, when suddenly it came to him that the stink of wrongness was rolling from the six. Abruptly, they had daggers in their hands, as if they had realized he had seen them. "They have knives!" he roared, and threw the cheese platter at them. The common room erupted into confusion, men shouting, the singer screaming, Nita shouting for Billy, everything happening at once. Lan leaped to his feet, and a ball of fire darted from Moraine's hand, and Loyal snatched up his chair like a club, and Zareen danced to one side, cursing. She had a knife in her hand, too, but Perrin was too busy to notice much of what anyone else did. Those men seemed to be looking straight at him, and his axe was hanging from a peg up in his room. Seizing a chair, he ripped off a thick chair leg that ran up to make one side of the ladder back, hurled the rest of the chair at the men, and set about him with his long bludgeon. They were trying to reach him with their naked steel, as if Lan and the others were only obstacles in their way. It was a tight tangle, where all he could manage was to knock blades away from him, and his wilder swings threatened Lan and Loyal and Zareen as much as any of his six attackers. From the corner of his eye, he saw Moraine standing to one side, frustration on her face. They were all so mixed together that she could do nothing without endangering friend as well as foe. None of the knife-wielders as much as glanced at her. She was not between them and Perrin. Panting, he managed to crack one of the ordinary-looking men across the head so hard that he heard bones splinter, and abruptly realized they were all down. It all seemed to him to have gone on for a quarter of an hour or more, but he saw that Billy was just halting, his large hands working as he stared at the six men sprawled dead on the floor. Billy had not even had time to reach the fight before it was done. Lan wore a face even grimmer than usual. He began searching the bodies thoroughly, but with a quickness that spoke of distaste. Loyal still had his chair raised to swing. He gave a start and set it down with an embarrassed grin. Moraine was staring at Perrin, and so was Zareen as she retrieved her knife from the chest of one of the dead men. That stench of wrongness was gone, as if it had died with them.
Gray Man, the Aes Sedai said softly. And after you.
Gray Man? Nita laughed, both loud and nervously. Why, Mistress Mari, next you'll say you do believe in boggles and bugbears and fetches, and old Grimm riding with the black dogs in the wild hunt.
Some of the men who had been listening to the songs laughed, too, though they looked as uneasily at Moraine as at the dead men. The singer stared at Moraine as well, her eyes wide. Perrin remembered that one ball of fire before everything grew too jumbled. One of the gray men had a somewhat charred look about him and gave off a sickly, sweet, burned smell. Moraine turned from Perrin to the stout woman.
A man may walk in the shadow, the Aes Sedai said calmly, without being shadow spawn.
Oh, aye, dark friends.
Nita put her hands on generous hips and frowned at the corpses. Lan had finished his searching. He glanced at Moraine and shook his head as if he had not really expected to find anything.
More likely thieves, though I did never hear of thieves bold enough to come right into an inn. I did never have even one killing in the Badger before. Billy, clear these out into a canal and put down fresh sawdust. The back way, mind. I do not want the watch putting their long noses into the Badger.
Billy nodded as if eager to be useful after failing to take a hand earlier. He grabbed a dead man by the belt in either hand and carried them back toward the kitchen.
Aes Sedai, the dark-eyed singer said. I did not mean to offend with my common songs.
She was covering the exposed part of her bosom, which was most of it, with her hands.
I can sing others, if you so like.
Sing whatever you wish, girl, Moraine told her. The White Tower is not so isolated from the world as you seem to think, and I have heard rougher songs than you would sing.
Even so, she did not look pleased that the common now knew she was Aes Sedai. She glanced at Lan, gathered the linen cloak around her, and started for the door. The warder moved quickly to intercept her, and they spoke quietly in front of the door. But Perrin could hear as well as if they had whispered right next to him.
Did you mean to go without me? Lan said. I pledged to keep you whole, Moraine, when I took your bond.
You have always known there were some dangers you are not equipped to handle, my Gaidine. I must go alone.
Moraine, she cut him off.
Heed me, Lan. Should I fail, you will know it, and you will be compelled to return to the White Tower. I would not change that, even if I had time. I do not mean you to die in a vain attempt to avenge me. Take Perrin with you. It seems the Shadow has made his importance in the pattern known to me, if not clear. I was a fool. Rand is so strongly Tavirn that I ignored what it must mean that he had two others close by him.
With Perrin and Matt, the Amarlin may still be able to affect the course of events. With Rand loose, she will have to.
Tell her what has happened, my Gaidine.
You speak as if you are already dead, Lan said roughly.
The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, and the shadow darkens the world. Heed me, Lan, and obey as you swore to.
With that, she was gone.